After 15 years of civil war, Lebanon began rebuilding. It did so through massive borrowing. As a result, the budget was drained. Today's debt is now equivalent to 170% of its GDP. Lebanon's economy is based on services like banking and tourism. It also does not produce many goods. It imports 80% of what it consumes. This is while it relies on investments from Persian Gulf countries. The war on Syria and falling oil prices decreased the central bank's resources. To make matters worse, there are three different exchange rates. One U.S. dollar used to be about 1,500 Lebanese pound. Now in the black market, it goes for 20,000 Lebanese pound. There are fears that Lebanon could fall back into its dark past of civil unrest.
The country of Lebanon is unraveling in the worst possible way. It has not had a government for almost a year now. Its economy is collapsing. The Prime Minister Designe Saad al-Hariri has just resigned, with all hopes now pinned on the new Prime Minister Designe Najib Mikati. And there has been widespread mismanagement and corruption to add to all of that. Let's zoom in on the corruption factor, and in particular, this man, Riyad Salameh, Lebanon's central bank chief. It is widely assumed that he has abused his power, facing allegations of fraud, suspected embezzlement, and money laundering. This is a snapshot of his rap sheet. Mr. Salameh, his brother, Raja Salameh, other relatives, and Marianne Hoayek, who heads the central bank's executive office, are all under investigation for illegally wiping funds from Lebanon into Swiss banks and then laundering millions in France through high-end real estate purchases. In one case, from the years 2002 through 2015, the bank transferred at least $330 million in commissions to the company's Swiss account. In another case, Raja Salameh transferred more than $200 million from Fori's Swiss account to his accounts in Lebanese banks with strong political ties. Now that's over $550 million. Let's see what our guests have to say about this first. Abbas Kodeh, he's a member of Citizens in a State political party who joins us for this segment. Citizens in a State is a Lebanese political party that was launched in 2016 by Charbel Nahas, a Lebanese politician and economist. Now, the party is also a participant in the 2019-2020 Lebanese protests. We also have with us Anis Germany, who is a political activist, both joining us for a breakdown of this crisis situation. Abbas Kodeh, let me first start with you. Welcome. One of the most cited reasons for Lebanon's economic collapse is the corruption factor. All eyes are on Riyad Salameh, Lebanon's central bank chief.
Well, Mahdi, you talked about corruption and mentioned Riyad Salameh. Well, Salameh is just a part of the system. This sectarian political system doesn't allow you to build a real state. It's not a sudden collapse we're seeing now. This has been going since 1997, once we borrowed dollars from outside Lebanon. So it was a series of forced decisions were made that led us to the collapse.
Well, Anis Germany, let me ask you then, should all eyes be on Riyad Salameh, Lebanon's central bank chief?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to describe Riyad Salameh as a mastermind who outwitted his employees by creating some kind of empire right under their noses. It really doesn't take much for a human being to engage in criminal activity when he was employed to do just that. If you look back at Riyad Salameh's CV, it's quite short, actually. Before he was governor of Central Bank, he used to invest money for the rich guys to increase their wealth at Merrill Lynch. He just happened to manage the wealth of Rafiq Hariri, who was impressed by his skills, and then he gave him the job. It was as simple as that. Usually, governors of central banks have a background in law, because their job is to uphold the law, to make sure everybody's working under the same rules.
Thank you. Time for our info news section, where other economic news takes center stage. Now, for our first economic news story, we're going to go to outer space. Well, this piece of news is actually a bit old, but it got lots of attention for all the wrong reasons. We know that the billionaire Jeff Bezos took flight into space. The whole world was mesmerized by this achievement, as they call it. But Oxfam took a different approach. It said that a handful of people accumulate enough wealth to flee the planet amid widespread suffering on an increasingly polluted, warming, and pandemic-ravaged Earth. It actually called it stratospheric inequality. On to Colombia, crisis there is somewhat continuing. The country recently marked its Independence Day, but protests against poverty, protests against inequality, they resumed on that day. Well, how bad is the economy in Colombia doing? We know that there are many negative indicators on Colombia for quite some time, and economic contraction is one of them. 7% economic contraction is what was recorded last, and because of that, it has pushed an additional 3 million people into poverty. On to Iran. A major achievement happened in Iran recently. Iran opened an oil terminal to bypass strategic Strait of Hormuz. According to the Iranian president, outgoing president, I should say, Hassan Rouhani, he said the opening of this oil terminal in the Gulf of Oman showed the failure of U.S. sanctions, securing the continuation of Iran's oil exports. So kudos to Iran for another achievement there. And finally, Nord Stream 2, all the controversy surrounding that. Remember how the former U.S. President Donald Trump wanted that to be axed, including the current President Joe Biden. Well, it showed Russia has leverage on Europe because now it's part of history's dustbin. U.S. and Germany reached a deal on the Russian gas pipeline, Nord Stream 2. It would allow the completion of the pipeline to Europe without the imposition of further U.S. sanctions unless Russia uses it as a political weapon.
You're listening to Economics Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
In that section, we'll begin with a look at some of the economic indicators which point to what some have called, we're going to overview of Lebanon's stats overall. For example, when we take a look at the population, it comes at 6 million for Lebanon, also close to 900,000 refugees that country is hosting. Then poverty rate comes in at 55%, unemployment rate 45%, but that figure could be a lot higher with inflation coming in at 60%. Take a look at the country's GDP. That's very telling the way that this GDP has functioned over the years. The year 2010, it came in at 8%, as you see here. But then it just kept going down, one drop after another, which, as you can see, 3.8%, then negative 1.9%, all the way down to 20.3% for the year 2020. Now, in terms of what the World Bank has said, it's a very startling statement. It says that such a brutal contraction that we just witnessed there is something that's usually associated with conflicts or wars, which gives you an idea of the depth of the problem. But let's take a listen to what the poverty rate is in terms of the bigger picture in Lebanon.
Lebanon has experienced significant economic and political instability over the past few years. This has had major impact on poverty. A recent study that we did in ESQA estimates the poverty rate to be around 55%, according to our data in May 2020. In 2019, it was 28%.
Okay, Lebanon's public debt, our next focus. Taking a look at the debt as percent of the GDP in billions of dollars, the year 2010, it stood at 137%, and you can see how quickly it's rising throughout the years, all the way through the year 2020, standing at 178% of the country's GDP. Now, Lebanon's balance of payments deficit needs to be looked at. It was $10.2 billion by the end of November 2020. And as recent as a couple of years ago, as you can see here, that has reached $5.8 billion. It was a slight decrease from before, but obviously you can see how that has increased again throughout the years from 2010 through the year 2019. Now, that brings us to Lebanon's currency. The Lebanese pound to the U.S. dollar exchange rate, it's no surprise, the crisis that this country is going through, you can see the official rate since 1997 has been $1 to equal 1,507 Lebanese pounds. But take a look at where the jump occurred, which is right around here, where you can see the steep rise going all the way up to 20,000 Lebanese pounds. So the black market rate, as of today, doesn't mean that tomorrow is going to be the same. It's probably going to increase. It stands at 20,000 Lebanese pound. So this economic fallout, obviously, is very telling and severe impact on the dollar compared to the Lebanese pounds. So what does that mean? Well, let's take a look at the purchasing power of the Lebanese. That has fallen dramatically. We're going to take a look at this infographic to give you an idea about how badly it has affected the purchasing power. And take a look at the milk. Now, over here, you can see the cash receipt for what, in the year 2019, Lebanese pound could buy, 10,250 Lebanese pound, milk, tomatoes, oranges, apples, cucumbers, rice, and chicken. Now, the year 2020, that same amount of money can only value milk, tomatoes, and oranges, all 1 kilogram. So you can see four of those items have come off the food table of each Lebanese. Now we come to the year 2021. Just 1 liter of milk is all you can buy for 10,000 Lebanese pounds, as of compared to the year 2019, where you could buy all these items for that one, for that 10,000 Lebanese pounds.
Lebanon just marked its 1 year anniversary of its massive port blast. The country plunged into political and economic chaos. The economy tanked as a result. Not that it was doing well. Most Lebanese goods flowed in and out of that port. Now the Lebanese were left with a broken economy and a broken country. Tensions were running high. Najib Miqati took over as the prime minister designate after Saad al-Hariri's resignation. This was his latest stance.
Frankly, with regard to the government, I was hoping the pace would be faster. It's going a bit slow. We wanted to form a government and announce it to the Lebanese people before August the 4th. August the 4th is a disaster that fell upon Lebanon and all the Lebanese people.
And these are some of his previous statements when he served as a prime minister.
Don't prejudge my behavior, please, and especially the international community.
This cabinet will not take, or it will not put Lebanon or take Lebanon into any radical decision. Lebanon always has a very, very good relation with the international community. We would like to maintain stability in the country. We would like to create a prosperity in the economy, and that's our objective today.
The Lebanese, however, are pessimistic.
There's a cocktail of crises that is plaguing Lebanon. Aside from the immediate economic factors, there are also competing interests in the country. Now, it is reported that Russia, for example, is looking to energy to gain a foothold in the country. Moscow's strategic interests intensified after the discovery of a large number of big subsea gas fields in what's called the Levant Basin. Russian company Novatek is part of a consortium which includes France's Total and Italy's Eni that has started oil and gas exploration on behalf of Beirut. Okay, in our final guest section, we will squeeze our last questions in. Abbas Kadeh, member of Citizens in a State Political Party, joins us, and is Germany political activist. And Omar Nashabi, lecturer at Lebanese American University and founding member of Al-Akhbar newspaper, all join us now. Okay, Omar, first to you. France, the former colonial power in Lebanon, has taken a lead role in trying to encourage Lebanon's politicians to agree on reforms, particularly in the energy and banking sectors, to salvage the Lebanese economy. But the EU and U.S. are using sanctions against Lebanon, especially the U.S., who wants to deal with Hezbollah through the lens of its so-called maximum pressure campaign. What do you think this is all about? I mean, is it all about cornering and alienating, for example, Hezbollah and Iran when it comes to the U.S. and EU's and the EU in terms of focusing on that aspect in order to benefit Israel, for example?
Yes, well, it is unfortunate that the political parties in Lebanon rely on foreign intervention and foreign initiatives for reform that is internal reform. That is not feasible. I think any foreign initiative for reform in Lebanon would be focused on the interests of these foreign countries. The Lebanese people and the Lebanese political parties should come together and find an agreement without any foreign intervention.
All right, Anis, what do you think about this so-called French initiative to encourage Lebanon's politicians, as France has stated, to agree on reforms? This is while you're looking at the EU mulling new sanctions and the U.S. that has already imposed sanctions on Lebanon.
Well, France's unilateral initiative to try to salvage the situation in Lebanon after August 4th, the explosion of August 4th last year, was quickly shrugged off by the sectarian leaders. I mean, they know very well that France lacks the military and financial capabilities to either make or break any kind of Lebanese system. So instead, they're all waiting for the U.S. and Iran negotiations over the nuclear deal. And among the clauses will be, a situation that's something about Lebanon. This is what everybody's waiting for. However, France's stance today is different because, if you remember, Macron visited Lebanon twice, and nobody gave a damn about it. The third time, however, he was lucky enough to escape because he had COVID, and it would have been really a big public embarrassment for him because, visiting the country three times and telling everybody, do this, do that, and nobody cares, that would have been catastrophic for him. However, today, France's stance is a bit different. They're more setting themselves up as mediators between the U.S. and European bloc and Lebanon. I think, the U.S.'s maximum pressure campaign against Hezbollah ended with Trump's term. Today, the Biden administration has adopted a different kind of strategy. They're focusing more on China, and they're tying up all sorts of loose ends within the region, including Yemen, Afghanistan, and even Lebanon. I mean, they only have two goals and the two top priorities in Lebanon, just to make sure that the country does not completely disintegrate in order to avoid any kind of other mass migration wave of Lebanese, Palestinians, and Syrians towards Europe, and to make sure that the southern border with Israel remains somewhat stable.
All right, so finally to you, Abbas Kadeh, no matter how you look at the situation in Lebanon, it needs investments. Russia and China is said to have shown interest. In particular, Russia is looking to energy to gain a foothold in the country through the Eastern Mediterranean, especially by reducing competition from rival pipelines, like the proposed friendship pipeline that's between Iran, Syria, and Iraq. Will Russia and maybe China look to invest in Lebanon, and what do you think that will bring for Lebanon? Is it going to obtain its intended goals?
Well, whoever invests in this land, if Russia or China, is not the core of the issue in my mind. More important than that is whether we have leaders who regard the Lebanese as citizens and not as clients. Leaders who will save the society, leaders who consider the issues of the entire state and not the interest of the artificial component concept, not leaders who are hostages to foreign interests, if USA or France or even East. We need to be capable of developing a sovereign state that can take advantage of negotiating more powerfully with the outside forces instead of having the situation we are currently having now. We are very weak, and we are trying to negotiate from a weak point, and that's not good at all.
Lebanon's story is a rather sad one. I mean, first you had the 15 years of civil war that practically ruined the country. And then while the country was trying to make up for all those lost years economically, it pursued wrong fiscal policies, especially when it came to things like debt. that combined with massive corruption at the same time, the country is in the situation that it is now. All eyes are on Najib Mikati to save the country. He has had a go at this position before, but he gave up on it and resigned. That to look at a Lebanese to work out Lebanon's problems, that's okay. But to look outside of Lebanon for Lebanon's dire monetary straits like France or financial institutions like the IMF, that could be dangerous because it will most certainly come with strings attached. That does it for this edition of Economic Divide. The questions and comments are always welcome. For me, Kometarui, it's goodbye until the next program.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The illegal Zionist entity will definitely vanish from the world map, and judging from its recent suicidal attempts in southern Lebanon, coupled with the suicidal remarks of Premier Naftali Bennett and War Minister Benny Gantz, it will be the most horrible end that any criminal regime has ever met in history. It is only a matter of time for the fake regime of Israel to cease its illegal existence on the soil of Palestine. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Keihan International. This article is published under the heading Zionist Regime's Suicidal Moves. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. It seems the grave is ready, and the corpse, on life support for the past several decades, tired of its precarious survival, is yearning for burial, or more properly, cremation, since the fast approaching end is likely to be the combustible, which means no need for any undertakers. Yes, the illegal Zionist entity called Israel will definitely vanish from the world map, and judging from its recent suicidal attempts in southern Lebanon, coupled with the suicidal remarks of Premier Naftali Bennett and War Minister Benny Gantz, it will be the most horrible end that any criminal regime has ever met in history. Emboldened by its almost daily brutalities against the unarmed residents of Beit al-Muqaddas, its frequent battering of the defenseless stone-throwing people of the West Bank, and its sporadic air raids on the besieged Gaza enclave, where the retaliatory rockets of defenders have not yet acquired the power to thoroughly pummel the occupiers, the Zionist entity, earlier this week, made the folly to test the patience of Lebanon's legendary anti-terrorist movement, the Hezbollah. The response was swift. Around 20 short-range projectiles were fired as warning shots by the Lebanese defenders, who could well have destroyed the enemy military base on the occupied Sheba farms, but chose to target the nearby uninhabited areas as warning shots. The harebrained Israelis, however, again miscalculated by firing artillery shells at a time when, with the backing of their godfathers in Washington and London, they intend to provoke the Islamic Republic of Iran by thundering threats. The reply from Tehran was to the point. General Hossein Salami, the chief of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, said, "We are all prepared for the showdown." Other senior commanders have also warned the Zionists against playing with fire in the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman region by blaming Iran for supposed attacks on commercial shipping. IRGC head of the Aerospace Division, Brigadier General Amir Ali Hajizadeh, made it clear, "The enemies have tested us before and know what response they will face. We have both the power and the will to exercise power. We will certainly deliver a harsh response, and they cannot make such a mistake. Let us wait and see how the Zionist entity and its criminal backers behave. One wrong move, and without the least doubt, the Zionist regime will be a thing of the past." Meanwhile, the resistance front, stretching from Palestine to Syria and from Iraq to Yemen, which lauded Lebanon's Hezbollah for its retaliatory steps, has issued separate statements to warn the Zionist entity of their collective power that is capable of liberating not just the Sheba Farms and the Golan Heights, but all of Beit al-Muqaddas. Yes, it is only a matter of time for the fake regime of Israel to cease its illegal existence on the soil of Palestine.
Around the world with reporters.
The Secretary General of Lebanon's resistance movement, Hezbollah, said that the recent Israeli attack was a very dangerous development, which has not occurred in the last 15 years, stressing that the resistance needed to respond swiftly.
"Our response was linked directly to the two incidents of Israeli Air Force attacks, which targeted Lebanese territory for the first time in 15 years. And our response had very clear tools and objectives. We calculated our moves very precisely. Our enemy and our friends said this. They said open territory. They did not target civilians. So we also targeted open areas with no civilians. But we had many options. We could hit open areas in Sheba Farms, in northern occupied Palestine, or the occupied Golan Heights."
Said Hassan Nasrallah made the remarks in a televised speech to commemorate the 15th anniversary of the 2006 war. He said that Israel deliberately targeted open areas in the middle of the night in order to terrorize civilians, and presumed that the resistance would not respond because of the various domestic problems inside Lebanon. Said Nasrallah stressed that the main deterrence for Israel is the capabilities of the resistance.
"The enemy today is more fearful than any time in the past because of the developments in Palestine and the region and the transformations in the region and the ascending strength of the resistance and because of the deep internal divisions and the mutual hatred between the occupying Zionist groups. Facing their internal issues and the strengthening of the resistance, everyone in the Zionist entity is talking about an existential threat."
Experts believe the military potential of Hezbollah has created a balance of deterrence where Israel is incapable of even starting a war.
"Israel wants Hezbollah to start the war. The situation will be different. Hezbollah is aware of this, will not Israel let him go to war, you know, anytime Israel wanted."
The leader of Lebanon's resistance noted that in any future confrontation, the Israeli military will disintegrate completely and would be heavily defeated.
The 2006 war had settled a certain status quo, which remains until today, with a new regional equation, which comprises all the resistance groups in the region. Any miscalculation by the Israelis could be detrimental for Israel. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The visiting the famous Eiffel Tower in Paris has become more complicated than before. Now, people have to show an electronic document that proves that they are vaccinated twice. If not, they need to show a negative PCR test. However, most of the visitors do not consider this procedure as a problem.
It's a good opportunity to show that you're vaccinated. For me, this is perfect. This way, we are all sure that we are vaccinated.
I'm fine with it. I mean, if it lets us do things like this, then why not? To go back to some kind of normal, being able to spend time with our family, go on vacation, it's nice.
The same procedure is used to visit public places like the Louvre Museum. Rows are longer than usual because people have to show their pass.
I'm rather in favor of the health pass. If it is to protect everyone and to prevent the virus from spreading, that's better for everybody.
The French Parliament and Senate have voted this new law, and earlier this week, the Constitutional Council has approved the law text. The health pass will now be extended also to restaurants and trains. But protesters continue taking the streets. They were again tens of thousands in France and at least 2,000 in Paris. Why? Jerome Rodriguez, who lost his eye in a previous protest, organized this march. He explains that the problem is not the vaccination, but the limitation of liberties.
We are here to protest against the violation and decline of liberties in France. We are not here against the vaccines. The health pass is just one extra restrictive law after another. The first restrictive law was against the yellow vests, the second one about global security, and now the third with the health pass. Macron should take care of the poor people, not only of the rich companies who earned a lot of money during this COVID crisis.
The protesters are especially targeting the French government that is using force rather than persuasion to obtain a double vaccination of a large majority of the French. The reason is medical. Today, most of the people who arrive in hospitals with severe symptoms of the COVID-19 virus are not vaccinated. Most of the people who transmit the virus are not vaccinated either. Despite ongoing protests against the mandatory health pass, the majority of the French is bowing more and more to the medical evidence. Today, vaccination is the only efficient way to hold back the coronavirus. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
This is Pin Baldak, a Afghan border crossing in southwest of Pakistan. North Taliban have shut it down, demanding Pakistan a visa-free movement of Afghan citizens. The complete closure of the border has suspended transportation of edible items and movement of thousands of people from both sides. The Taliban recaptured most of the border crossing with the neighboring countries of Afghanistan in an attempt to lay down a siege of President Ashraf Ghani's beleaguered government in capital Kabul. Islamabad has completed 90% of wide fence of nearly 2,700 kilometer long porous border with Afghanistan to contain the movement of terrorists sneaking into Pakistan to carry out terrorist attacks. If visa restriction is removed, Islamabad fears there would be more infiltration of terrorists into Pakistan. Therefore, the government here is unlikely to concede to the Taliban demand of a visa-free movement of Afghan citizens.
It's not a legitimate government who can come up with a legitimate demand or where it can ask a relationship which is based state to state. It has to legitimize itself. It has to bring itself to an acceptable and internationally recognized position.
The Taliban claim to have recaptured 85% of Afghan territory, controlling over 260 districts, most of which after the withdrawal of US-led NATO forces. The clashes between the Taliban fighters and Afghan National Army have made thousands of families homeless, and many of them were caught in the crossfire, particularly in the southern parts of Afghanistan. The UN has warned an unfolding humanitarian crisis in Afghanistan.
The provincial capitals of Kandahar, Herat, and Lashkargah, in particular, have come under significant pressure. This is a clear attempt by the Taliban to seize urban centers with the force of arms.
The ongoing talks between Taliban and President Ashraf Ghani's government in Doha have so far failed to take off. Both sides remain glued to their respective demands, which has heightened the fear of Taliban overtaking rest of Afghanistan in near future.
Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Palestinian groups in the Gaza Strip hailed the Hezbollah's move to fire a barrage of rockets toward the Israeli regime in response to Thursday Israeli air raids on South Lebanon. Palestinians welcomed the move, describing it as a strong message to Israel.
The Lebanese rockets foiled Israeli plans and projects aimed at separating the resistance in the region. It proved that the resistance won't remain silent in the face of the Israeli crimes. The Lebanese response is a message that Israel cannot impose its policies in the region, and the resistance will keep defending its rights.
The Israeli military said its Iron Dome system intercepted 10 of 19 rockets on Friday, with six falling in open areas in a third day of tension across the borders. There have been no reports of casualties or serious damage. Palestinian groups expressed their support to all forms of resistance against Israel and announced their readiness to stand with the resistance movement in Lebanon in defending their rights.
We hail the response of the resistance in Lebanon against Israeli airstrikes. This Lebanese move emphasizes the importance of the resistance in defending its rights and foiling the Israeli policies. The Israeli regime is also still practicing all forms of violence against the Islamic and Arab nations, and the resistance is the only way to put an end to these crimes.
The resistance said it won't allow the Israeli regime to impose new policies in the region, and that Israel won't go unpunished for its crimes.
We really welcome the Lebanese move to respond to the Israeli airstrikes in South Lebanon and fire rockets at the occupied territories. We stress that we are all united in resistance to liberating Palestine and getting the Israeli occupation away from the region. We are supporting our brothers in Lebanon, and we are all ready to defend any Israeli aggression against Lebanon.
Palestinian factions here welcome the Lebanese response against the Israeli attacks, stressing on fully supporting the resistance in Lebanon against the Israeli aggression with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says it has fired dozens of rockets near positions of Israeli occupation forces in the Shabaa farms. Hezbollah added that the latest round of rocket fire came in response to the Israeli air raids that hit South Lebanon on Thursday. In an interview with a local agency, Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasim stressed that the resistance is much more capable than it was in 2006, yet downplayed the possibility of an all-out war.
In this phase, the resistance is in an extremely high state of readiness, and it cannot even be compared to the level of capability and alertness which was present in 2006. Whether in the arms, preciseness, military planning, training, preparation, and capabilities. And Israel knows this. So if they launch a foolish aggression under any pretext, Hezbollah will be ready.
An Israeli military spokesman stressed that Israel does not wish to escalate to a full war, but is prepared for it. Experts believe Israel was trying to move escalation towards the inside of Lebanon, but the resistance took things back to square one.
The Israelis have been trying for a while to change the rules of engagement with Lebanon, but Hezbollah's resistance has proven today that the Israelis cannot change the status quo as long as there is a resistance which is ready to face the Israeli aggressions. This was not only retaliation to the latest round of Israeli shelling, it was also a warning and a response to all the violations committed by the Israelis, whether in the air, land, or sea.
Lebanese President Michel Aoun and Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Hassan Diab urged the United Nations interim forces in Lebanon to put pressure on Israel to stop its aggressions against Lebanon's sovereignty. Several statements from Palestinian resistance groups were issued in support of Hezbollah's retaliation, which many see as stressing the full legitimacy of resistance groups to face occupation forces. With no civilian areas targeted from both sides, the status quo seems to have remained unchanged. It's the first time the Israelis launched such an attack against Lebanon since the 2006 war, but it's also the first time since then that the Lebanese resistance retaliates with multiple rockets against an Israeli military occupation post. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Fa
Following a recent call by the Afghan president on the entire nation to establish a united national front against the Taliban, residents of many cities, including Kabul, have welcomed the call by different moves, not just taking to the streets to chant supportive slogans and joining local armed fronts across the country.
Overall, people of Afghanistan widely welcome President Ghani's call for the establishment of a national front against the Taliban. We saw how rural people in Herat and other cities put their unity on show by chanting slogans in support of Afghan military forces. This shows that it is a real national uprising.
The entire nation knows that the Taliban have ruined the infrastructures. They are just after war and violence. So I strongly support Afghan national security and defense forces to stand against Taliban.
Afghan military forces say they are committed to strongly pound terrorists all over Afghanistan, mainly in southern Helmand province, thanks to strong support they are receiving from locals.
A report suggests that the shadow governor of Taliban for Helmand province and a number of top military commanders plus hundreds of them have so far been killed in attacks conducted by our forces. We will strongly pound anyone who stands against the nation, against the republic and the constitution. The Taliban must realize that we are committed to defend our land.
Referring to the recent war crimes committed by Taliban, locals here say, unlike the beliefs of U.S. Special Representative for Afghan Reconciliation Zalmay Khalilzad, who had said that Taliban has changed, the recent advances of Taliban proved that they are still following a dogmatic ideology. Some of the displaced Afghans accused Taliban militants of committing war crimes during their assaults on districts and provincial capitals over the recent month. They say the Taliban have killed civilians, used them as human shields, and destroyed their houses. The only way against the militants' violence, they say, is to resist. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Britain is known to be the hub of terrorist and corrupt fugitive political leaders fled from Pakistan. This is London residence of Altaf Hussain, a leader of Karachi-based ethnic political party. Back home, Hussain was convicted on terrorism and murder charges. Nonetheless, UK never handed him back to Pakistan of being what many believe an intelligence asset of British secret services. This is Ishaq Dar, the former finance minister who fled from Pakistan in 2018 to avoid prosecution on money laundering charges. And here comes the former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, who has been staying in these luxurious flats, which judges back in Pakistan found were purchased with the looted public money. However, pressure from Islamabad has now compelled Britain to change its long-held pro-fugitive policy after London decided to expel Nawaz Sharif. His request to further stay in the UK was rejected by Britain. His Pakistani passport is already invalid after Islamabad refused to renew it.
The UK government has been under intense pressure, not only from Pakistan, but various other countries whose fugitive leaders have been living in UK for a long period of time. UK government was under great pressure and under great criticism. And that could be a reason that the UK government basically did not allow Nawaz Sharif to stay on or extend the visa of Nawaz Sharif to stay in UK.
Nawaz Sharif fled Pakistan after plundering public exchequer. He should now come back to Pakistan and must return the money he looted, and after this, he can comfortably stay at his home in Pakistan.
Sharif was convicted and sentenced for 10 years on money laundering charges, but was released from jail in November 2019 only for medical treatment for a few weeks. However, since then, he has been residing in London despite repeated court orders to return home to face trial of corruption cases. The former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif is fast running out of his legal and political options after Britain decided to expel him. One of the choices, analysts believe, is to seek shelter in an Arab country after exhausting his all legal options to delay his expulsion from the UK. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
Pakistan's president, foreign minister and others joined this rally in support of the people of Kashmir.
The rallies were held in Pakistan to mark the second anniversary of India's, what Pakistan says, illegal move to revoke the special status of the disputed Kashmir region. India, on August 5, 2019, abrogated the Article 370 of the Indian Constitution that granted special status to the Jammu and Kashmir region. Pakistan rejected the move as a violation of the UN Security Council resolutions that seek a referendum to decide the final status of Jammu and Kashmir.
I want to assure my Kashmiri brothers that Pakistan will continue to support the people of Kashmir for their right to self-determination. We will continue to support Kashmiris till they get freedom.
Go India, go back!
Separately, Kashmiri leaders also took to the streets in Islamabad. The All Parties Hurriyat Conference staged a protest not far from the Indian High Commission in Islamabad.
We, the Kashmiris, not only in occupied Kashmir, Azad Kashmir, or in Pakistan, but over the world, where the Kashmiris are present, they are making this day as a black day. Why we are making this day as a black day? Because against the will and wish of the people of the Kashmir, India has abrogated its articles.
Protesters condemned the Indian policy towards Kashmir and vowed to continue their struggle until Kashmiris get their right to self-determination.
Kashmir is a disputed territory as per the United Nations resolutions. The resolutions have been passed and at the behest of the India. It was India who took the Kashmir dispute to the United Nations. And it is India, it is the then Prime Minister of India, Jawaharlal Nehru, who in his communique to Pakistan said, we do not believe in forced marriages, and Kashmir is will be given right to self-determination.
Kashmir remains at the heart of tensions between India and Pakistan. The dispute dates back to the partition of the subcontinent in 1947. Both countries have fought wars over the only Muslim majority state controlled by India. Tensions between India and Pakistan have further deepened since India revoked the special status of Kashmir. Pakistan insists India has to reverse the changes for any talks. India, however, is defending the changes, calling it as its internal matter, and hence the deadlock. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
The brutal battle between Taliban and government forces has intensified recently, with each side struggling to gain more area under their control. Top military officials in southern Helmand province have urged the residents of the city of Lashkargah to evacuate their houses. Reports say Afghan forces are planning to launch a heavy attack on Taliban inside the city of Lashkargah, who use residences of locals as human shields.
We had announced that if a single Talib arrives in Lashkargah city, he will be killed. Even if 1,000 of them arrive, we will kill them all. This fight is not ours. They are Takfiris and slaves of Punjabis. They aren't Afghans. Our fight against them is a pure jihad, and we will continue this holy jihad with a strong will.
Taliban has in recent weeks launched more attacks on provincial capitals, mainly in southern and western Afghanistan. This comes as many have believed neither the government nor the Taliban will achieve their goals to take full control of the country via insisting on further war. They say negotiation is the only solution to resolve the conflicts.
Today, the ancient city of Herat is under attack, and the war has reached inside people's houses in Lashkargah of Helmand. Meanwhile, violence is spreading across the northern Taliban city and other areas. We still hope to reach peace through responsible moves by the government and Taliban.
Based on official figures, over 1,000 Taliban militants have lost their lives in a series of attacks carried out by Afghan air and ground forces backed by local armed fronts since last week. Afghan forces increased their attacks on Taliban militants and liberated some of lost areas, including Nijrab and Talaobarfak districts in northern and northeastern Afghanistan. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani recently called on the entire nation to establish a united national resistance front against the Taliban. He argues that since the Taliban have put military victory on the top of its priorities list, the time has come to talk to militants with guns and resistance. Sayed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security has issued a chilling warning of the potential for further political violence, with little to no warning by domestic extremists who believe Donald Trump won the 2020 election. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Bevan Hurley, writer. This article is published under the heading, U.S. Government Issues Alert Over Threat of Violence in August, Tied to Trump Conspiracy Theories. Stay tuned, please, for the details of this article. The Department of Homeland Security has issued a chilling warning of the potential for further political violence, with little to no warning by domestic extremists who believe Donald Trump won the 2020 election. Multiple conspiracy theories of voter fraud are fueling the belief that the 2020 presidential election results will be overturned in August, and the former president will retake the White House this month. According to a DHS Office of Intelligence and Analysis bulletin obtained by ABC News, extremists are calling for violence if desired outcomes are not realized. The current threat environment is one which is fueled in large part by conspiracy theories and other narratives that are spread online by foreign governments, by foreign terrorist groups, and by domestic extremist thought leaders, and are consumed by individuals who are predisposed to engage in violence, a senior DHS official warned in the alert. Threats online of retaliatory violence had received much more public visibility in the last few days. The discussions and these theories have migrated away from being contained within the conspiracy and extremist online communities to where they are being the topic of discussion on web forums or more public web forums and even within the sort of media ecosystem, the official said. August has repeatedly been cited by conspiracy theorists as the month when the 2020 election results would be struck down. Donald Trump himself has fueled the narrative with claims of widespread voter fraud without offering any evidence. Supporters such as MyPillow founder Mike Lindell and Rudy Giuliani have further amplified the conspiracies that voting machines were hacked and that people voted, which are widely believed by Republican voters. The DHS said it did not have any specific evidence of an imminent plot. The department says it does not have the luxury of waiting till we uncover information with a level of specificity regarding a potential location and the time of an attack. Past circumstances have illustrated that calls for violence could expand rapidly in the public domain and may be occurring outside of publicly available channels. As such, lone offenders and small groups of individuals could mobilize to violence with little to no warning. the bulletin sent to state and local law enforcement agencies. The DHS bulletin says, as public visibility of the narratives increases, we are concerned about more calls to violence. Reporting indicates that the timing for these activities may occur during August 2021, although we lack information on specific plots or planned actions. The DHS official said they had heeded the lessons of the January 6th insurrection, in which a mob stormed the Capitol to prevent the House from certifying the election results, was that plans for violent attacks may be communicated on public forums. The department does not have the luxury of waiting till they uncover information with the level of specificity regarding the potential location and the time of an attack to act on potential threats due to threat of environment. Past circumstances have illustrated that calls for violence could expand rapidly in the public domain and may be occurring outside of publicly available channels. As such, lone offenders and small groups of individuals could mobilize to violence with little to no warning. The senior official said that one of the lessons learned from the January 6th storming Capitol is that information that may reflect a growing threat may be communicated on public forums.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khomeini guided the Iranian nation to determine their own fate, June 4, 2021. The televised speech delivered on June 4, 2021 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the 32nd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini. Greetings be upon him. The kind of Islam that Imam wanted. From the viewpoint of Imam, Islam is a system that seeks justice and that it is opposed to arrogance and corruption. These are clear in the statements of Imam. These statements can be found both in his testament and in the 20 plus volumes on Imam's statements, both of which have been published. Of course, we ourselves heard these viewpoints directly from Imam, but those who were not born then and who did not see Imam could refer to his statements. The context of Imam's statements is clear. The kind of Islam that Imam believes in is anti-arrogance, that is, anti-American. It is against the domination and interference of foreigners and foreign powers, interference in the domestic affairs of the country. It is against kneeling before the enemy,